Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I'm Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. In today's episode, we are joined by Emily Patra. Emily is a Salesforce Certified Technical Architect and Regional Vice President at MuleSoft in the UK. Emily tells us a little bit about what she wanted to be while she was growing up, and then runs us through her IT consulting background, and then what first attracted her into the Salesforce ecosystem and joining Salesforce themselves. Emily tells us a little bit about the roles that she's played for Salesforce, and when she identified the CTA as a goal of hers, and how she approached going through that journey. We look at the gaps that she found she had through the journey and how she filled those gaps, and then what it was like to actually receive the confirmation that she had passed the review board. Emily gives us her opinion on what makes a great architect and some of the skills that she gained in her pre-Salesforce days that set her up for success in the Salesforce ecosystem. Emily tells us a little bit about what she loves from her day-to-day job and how her role has evolved over time, and what really excites her about the future and the goals that she's striving for now. I really enjoyed chatting to Emily, and I really think you'll get a lot out of this episode. And if you do, please do subscribe for future episodes that are coming through. So Emily, thank you so much for joining us. I'm really, really great to catch up with you again. Excited to delve a little bit deeper into your career this time around.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. Our pleasure. So for anyone that's listening or viewing this, I was running a panel at Virtual Dreaming, which was a really great success, and a massive congrats to the guys that were running that. But we heard a bit more about your career and your take on architecture and your journey to CTA. But I want to go a little bit deeper, and I always like to start with life before Salesforce. And what I'd really like to know is, what was your dream job when you were growing up?
So obviously it kept changing based on my age and what I knew. But I think somewhere I started off at civil services because I thought this was an impactful job. And I also very clearly knew what I didn't want to be. So I grew up in India. And in India, there were only two career choices when I grew up from any educational perspective. It was either you have to be a doctor or you have to be an engineer. I wanted to do neither. So, and doctor was definitely not on my list from, you know, the very beginning. I couldn't handle blood and I didn't like biology classes. So yeah, so it was civil services. But then I got introduced to computers at that point, 486, the first Pentium came out, and I got super excited. And I thought, okay, I want to do something with computers. I didn't know exactly what, but as I grew up, I think that firmed up into more like, I want to be in the technology industry. I want to be dealing with technology because that's my area of interest. So yeah, pretty early on, I got hooked onto technology.
So were you one of these people at that point that would like try and break computers, or you wanted to understand how everything worked? Is that how you kind of first approached it?
Yes. I wanted to understand how everything worked. I opened up all the wires behind it and tried to put it back together, which my dad, I'm sure, had a heart attack with. But yeah, and I was very lucky that my dad got us a Pentium 1. It was the first ever Pentium which had come out with a 1 GB hard drive. And it was an amazing. No one had heard of a GB hard drive at that point, and a colored monitor, and Windows, and PowerPoint, and Excel. You know, it was very exciting, and I used to spend hours on it. You know, trying to learn it, trying to pick up some programming, trying to learn how PowerPoint works. So yeah, I used to tinker around. That I remember one of my summers was literally 3 months on the computer, and that's where I got my glasses.
So what did the early career look like then? So going from, you know, identifying that you wanted to be in technology, what were your earlier jobs like?
So my earlier jobs, so I did a bit of internship when I was doing my MBA. So I did my graduation in computer science, obviously, you know, pursuing my interest, which I think I breezed through because I was enjoying it. So, you know, and when you're enjoying something, it's just easy to perform. So I was enjoying it. And then I went into a management degree, a master's degree. But then I chose to specialize in what they call the systems IT, because that was a new stream coming up. They needed managers for the technology industry and people who understand the business and the technology industry. And that was, again, of huge interest to me. So I did that. And then I did a few internships. One of the first internships was with Tata's. You know, if you know, they're the owners of Jaguar Land Rover and owners of a steel organization. So I did my internship with them. That's where I got introduced to Oracle. Well, not in the current form, but, you know, some sort of Oracle databases and things. And then, yeah, my first job was as a software engineer. So I actually got recruited on campus as a software engineer, which I was hugely excited about. It felt like the dream job at that time.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And even now, like if you look back to your computer science degree, do you feel that that's been a significant milestone? Is that something that's really helped you launch your career?
Absolutely. If I hadn't got into the degree, I wouldn't have solidified my direction of going into career in software. But also, if I hadn't coded in Fortran and C and COBOL at that time, I wouldn't have realized that it's interesting to build logic out and it's interesting to automate stuff and play around. So I discovered my interest. So I think it was a huge foundation for me to go and do new stuff.
Yeah, nice. So do you remember when you first thought of yourself as an architect?
Yes, I do. So my initial part of the career, I was more like, as I said, software engineer. So I was developing on Oracle platform. But luckily, I got myself into the Oracle ERP space, which was, you know, very business focused. And I had to also understand the business outputs and, you know, the business processes like order to cash or procure to pay, you know, and that was a good advantage of being in the ERP space, that you were not totally focused on just coding and writing Java somewhere. So initially I started working in Boston, where one of my customers, we sat and we spoke about an end-to-end process, started asking questions about, yes, but that integration will not work with that in mind, but I don't understand how and where this goes. At that point, I did not know that was architecture, you know, that getting the full picture, trying to understand the impact. But I think end of that year, I saw someone come in with an architect title in Boston doing exactly the same thing. I said, I could do that. You know, I already do that. I think like that. So yeah, I think that was my moment where I realized architecture was what I really wanted to do. And sure, That's where my interest was. But I was already kind of playing the role without the title at that point.
So how do you make that transition? Did you then look for mentors and people to give you kind of the guidance from how you go from software engineering to an architect, or it just became a natural process for you?
No, at that time, architects weren't as popular as they are now. And architect title is very limited to like enterprise architects or head of solutions or something like that. And so when I initially started my career, there wasn't a lot of people who could mentor into, you know, here's how you get into architecture. So I think it was a little bit of natural progression, but I do think I learned a lot from senior people who were actually architecting in the organization, though it wasn't a formal mentorship. But for me, it was always about, you know, looking for smarter people around where you are and understanding what they do, have those conversations. And most people are very accommodating and they will answer questions when you ask them. So yeah, that's how I learned, but I didn't have a formal mentor at that point. I got a formal mentor. I got into the concept of mentorship a while later.
Okay. So you were obviously very active in the Oracle ecosystem. You that's where you were initially, yeah, kind of playing that architecture role. If you look back now to the Oracle ecosystem, how did that compare then to what we now see in the Salesforce ecosystem in terms of like the complexity of projects, the whole Ohana, like was there that kind of feel and the breadth of products and everything that was going on?
Yeah. So when I joined Oracle as an organization, Oracle was the big hot thing in the market. At that point, Oracle had acquired pretty much every competition. There was, you know, we had acquired PeopleSoft, JD Edwards, Siebel, Java, Sun, you know, everything was coming into Oracle. So it was the biggest market. I think from a career perspective, great market to be in, lots of opportunities. Almost by the time I left Oracle, there were almost too many jobs on Oracle. You know, it was like that. And also ERP being the new concept, and we didn't really have a CRM. Like CRMs used to be clunky. Siebel was a pretty clunky CRM. And there wasn't this concept of cloud at all. Everything was on-premise. The projects naturally used to be extremely complex. If I compare them to the complexity of some of the projects I see now, well, if I only look at Salesforce as one part of the project, it's not that complex. Obviously, we are talking about digital transformation now because there's this burst of all these applications coming in, and the integration piece of it really makes it complex now. But it was a different kind of complexity when I was working on the ERP space because you were only dealing with one space at a time, and the key challenges came from infrastructure. It took about a year to kick off a program because you actually had to buy the hard metal, get infrastructure people, install, create databases, you know. So by the time you stood up an application project team who would actually implement the ERP for you, it was a year easily. And even then we were still dealing with backlogs of things that hadn't been done. And also the basic workings, I still remember I use this analogy all the time. When I was working with Oracle and I was an architect, obviously, one of the key things as an architect is you're looking at how your environment is progressing, where you're testing, you know, do you have all the right migration paths in place? And that used to be months of job, not because we didn't know what to do, because once you identified that you needed three test environments with certain kinds of data and connection, to provision those environments, it used to take months for the DBAs to spin up something, then populate it with data. So it used to be crazy. And one of my moments I remember when I joined Salesforce was someone was going through this whole Salesforce, how it looks like. I had never seen Salesforce before. And they said, can I get a test environment? And they said, sure. And they clicked this button, which created a sandbox for me. And my jaws dropped at that point. I was like, oh my God, this can happen. You know, I don't have to wait for a DBA to do it for me anymore. Yeah, yeah. If you know, the complexities were very different, but sure, they were definitely 3-year projects at a minimum.
My next question was going to be what interested you about Salesforce, but I think we know the answer, right? It's everything just was a lot easier in terms of getting things done.
But also because it was cloud, and you know, the cloud was again the new trend, and ERPs were becoming the dinosaurs of the back end system more than the front end system.
So was it a leap of faith at the time? Like, did you have every confidence that, you know, cloud computing was here to stay, and you know, the Salesforce ecosystem was going to be the next big thing?
Yeah, it was a bit of leap of faith, but definitely if you are in the industry and you're following trends, you know that it was going the cloud way. And you could see why, like any architect could see why. Why would you want to end up spending one year setting up infrastructure and then maintaining that infrastructure over the years when you could actually get started with a low amount of investment very quickly with a cloud infrastructure? So it made sense to me. And when I saw the Salesforce ecosystem and I saw Mark Benioff's, you know, Dreamforce keynote, hugely inspired me. At that point, you know, I was not in Salesforce, but I was like, I like the leader, I like the values that Salesforce projected, and obviously I love the technology, the way it was going. So there was no reason for me not to try this. But when I joined Salesforce, I did not know what I was getting into.
Sure. And you joined as an architect?
Yes, I joined as an architect, yeah.
So did you have immediate confidence transitioning from one technology to another? Do you just naturally, like, is it just you know you're a good architect, so you the technology isn't important? Is that how you approached it? Or was there certain skills that you knew you could rely on just because you'd been an architect for years?
Yeah, obviously that was it. There's always an initial hesitation because, you know, when you've been an expert in your technology area, you know, for 15 years, making a switch to something unknown that you've never worked on is always a bit intimidating. At some point, you feel like, oh, I don't know what I'm getting into. But obviously, my architecture foundation was strong, and I knew that the concepts would be the same. Yes, I'll probably have a steeper learning curve in the technology domain, but the concepts will remain the same. The architecture will remain the same. So somehow I will get that foundation. And the first few months were, yeah, it was a very steep learning curve. You know, it was almost like going back to zero and start learning everything. But as I started learning, I realized a lot of what I knew could be applied, but also some of what I knew, I had to unlearn it from a cloud perspective and learn it a different way. So it was an interesting journey.
Yeah, for sure. And talking of journeys, the next big journey that you decided to go down was the CTA path, right? So at what point did you identify that a goal, and why was that a goal?
So when I joined Salesforce and I was looking at all the certifications I could do, all the learning I could do, a few key people, and I was in the advisory team for Salesforce, strategic advisors. So obviously we had one of the best industry architects in there. And we had very senior people who had been in the ecosystem for very long. And I saw some of them were CTAs, and the people who were CTAs had a natural credibility about them when people talked about them, or they were the natural go-to people, and they were highly respected, within the organization. So I started digging a little more about, what is it? Why is it so rare? And I found out because there aren't many CTAs, and it's not easy to pass a CTA exam. So people who do pass it, either they pass it in multiple attempts, or they never pass it. Some never make it actually, and they just give up. So it was a good challenge always entices me. So it was a challenge, but also I thought the credibility, the recognition that came with it was, it was just part of my ambition that I have joined a new ecosystem. And the fastest way for me to prove my credibility was to be a CTA, because then you just got respect rather than having to prove yourself over and over again.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, you needed to learn a lot about Salesforce in order to pass the CTA like that. What were the kind of core architecture skills that you think enabled you to pass the CTA? Like what are the absolute kind of must-have architecture skills that anyone that's going for the CTA needs to have?
So I think it's not strictly technology architecture, but I think communication skill is a huge part of architecture skills, at least for me, because no matter how good an architect you are, if you can't translate your message at different levels, depending on the audience, you're not a good architect. Because finally, the job of an architect is to make sure that the implementation and the business is joined up and we are achieving the outcomes that we want to from a business perspective, but the technical people know what they have to do to implement that. So I think communication skills was huge, which is not a core architecture skill, but it makes a good architect. The second thing, my knowledge of how Oracle databases work, a little bit of programming that I had done. So in my Oracle days as a software engineer, so all that counted because I knew how logic flew. I knew algorithms. I knew a little bit of Java programming. So, the concepts of object-oriented programming, et cetera. And they were not same in Salesforce, but similar. It wasn't like completely new to you. It wasn't foreign language. It was just slightly different. But also concepts of integration, looking at the holistic view of how does data get in? How does data get out? What integrates to what? What could be the pitfalls? I think that is more important because for a CTA, you have to be able to evaluate your options. And the key to passing the CTA is, can you think of alternative options? Can you have an objective view of which option suits your scenario at that time, given the constraints you have? And is that the most optimal implementation to do? And that was a skill that you learn over the years. That comes with experience because, you look at an architecture and you're immediately able to say, oh, okay, too much data. I have to think about performance. I have to think of large data volumes. Or, this is an integration. So I have to think about patterns, whether I need an asynchronous, all this I already knew is just now learning how those patterns are implemented in Salesforce and how I could make it work in the optimal way with Salesforce. So I think, those skills are extremely important. And if someone is going into a CTA cold and without that kind of a background, it's a very, very difficult journey.
Yeah, because I think what we now see in the market is we get to see a lot of people that are coming into the Salesforce ecosystem, and that's all they've ever known. And, because Salesforce is now a career that people are aspiring to have, and it's not necessarily like it's not always a transitioning career from a Siebel to Salesforce now. So I think that's one thing that people need to understand is it's not that easy if all you know is Salesforce.
No, it's not. Because Salesforce has a specific way of doing things like every cloud technology has. But I think understanding that in any enterprise environment, it's not just Salesforce, or it's not just Oracle, or it's not just one platform that enterprises deal with. Today's enterprise have minimum, 100, 150 applications, if not more. And if you're going there as an architect and all you know is one out of those 100 systems and you don't have a clue how to go beyond that, then you're very restricted as an architect. And understanding of the ecosystem, understanding of other technologies is extremely important, I feel.
This episode of Talent Hub Talk is sponsored by our friends from Flow Republic. Flow Republic is a Salesforce architect academy that works with individuals and businesses to upskill and prepare Salesforce architects for the CTA review board. They also have a number of other offerings, including coaching and guiding on areas such as soft skills, consulting, and design training. Flow Republic are some of the brightest minds in the Salesforce ecosystem and have a proven track record of developing Salesforce professionals and helping architects to reach their goal of becoming a CTA. To find out more about the value they can add, please check out flowrepublic.com.
So I can't remember exactly how many topics or modules you're being scored on, but can you remember the one that was the biggest challenge for you when you were preparing?
Yeah, for me, it was the Apex platform developer one, because I had to learn a bit of Apex and I had to get hands-on it. And it had been quite some time that I had been actually hands-on with code. Sure. It was interesting, but it took me a little while to get myself up to speed and doing that. But once it was done, I think it was a good idea because I was so much more confident going into the platform and looking at codes and snippets. So that was my most challenging piece, I think.
Yeah. And for people that don't come from a development background, like you obviously had the benefit of coming through the computer science background and you were a software engineer. Like, how deep do they need to go in the coding aspect of it to become a CTA, in your opinion?
They do need to understand how to write code. And I'm not saying they need to be a gamer kind of code. You know, they don't need to have a complex coding environment. But by code, there are two things. I separate code into two aspects. One is the logic of the code, algorithms. Anyone who's going for any kind of technology has to understand how algorithms work. And not specific to a coding language, but it's just logic. Because if you're not logical, if you're not analytical, if you can't make, you know, an optimal algorithm work, then you can't write code in any way. So that is quite important. And then teaching yourself how to convert that algorithm into a code using any platform is a great benefit, because it trains your mind to think about an algorithm in terms of an implementation. And that helps when you're architecting something to think, these are the constraints. This is what could cause a bottleneck, or this is what could cause a performance issue. And it's important. So it's not, they don't need to go deep, but I do feel that having at least some experience of, you know, writing algorithms, training your mind to have a logical flow, like how you would automate things in a code, and then practicing with one environment definitely helps.
Sure. Okay. And I've read articles and we touched on this at Virtual Dreaming, is the sacrifice, right? Because it's a big, big ask. Can you shed some light on the amount of sacrifice and effort that this really takes?
It is a huge lift. So if anybody is committing to the CTA, I would say do not take it lightly. It probably could take up to 2 years in your life. And it, depending on where you're starting, how many attempts you're giving at CTAs. And the minimum effort, I would say, is once you've done all your certifications, once you've passed everything, and you start with your actual review board prep, it's probably a run-up 4 or 5 months of very intense scenario practicing, you know, going through all the limits, preparing your notes, making your mind maps, etc. And I used to give at least, 2 hours a day every night to do that. And then I used to have Fridays as my scenario building exercises where, you know, if I was lucky enough to have a coach, you know, I would do a scenario in a time-bound fashion, just like a CTA, and present it to a coach and then get some brutal feedback, which basically ruined my weekends. And I still remember coming out of my first scenario presentation thinking, I know nothing, you know, I've done nothing in the 17 years of my career. But it is brutal, and it is good to have that kind of a mentor or coach, because you really do need that honest feedback. And then you start working on it one by one and you start picking through the feedback and it makes sense. And you improve every time you do a scenario. But for me, I think, again, I was quite lucky that I made it through CTA in the first attempt. But even after all of this, a lot of people don't make CTA in the first attempt. And that means you have to keep the same level of preparation on till your next review boards, which is probably in 6 months' time or 1 year's time. And hence, it takes a lot of commitment. And for me, it was like locking myself up in a room over the weekend was not easy. getting away from, you know, family and friends was not easy. So I had to do a lot of expectation setting, saying, I'm going to be off the radar. I'm not joining a Friday night out because, you know, I'm studying. And people were like, what are you studying? Right? Why are you studying so much? And I'm like, it's something I want to do. Right? So it is a huge commitment, and you have to be committed. You have to be committed to giving up on things you like, giving up on your weekends, and giving up on your evenings till you get there. But I think with the right amount of prep, it's doable. But a lot of people just, you know, don't manage to get that time, most probably.
So were you a better architect after the prep? So did that, because it's is it just theory that you're taking in, or are you actually becoming a better architect through that journey, even if you passed first time, but not everyone does, and not everyone does become a CTA? So even if they don't, do they go through that process and become a better architect anyway?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think becoming a CTA makes you a better architect. I think it's the grueling journey that you go through over 2 years or 1 year. That is what makes you a better architect. And the reason is, CTA is scenario-based. It is application of architecture. So as and when you're going through your domain badges, you know, every time you go into a real project, you're talking with a customer, you start applying that knowledge. And, you know, just because you've just passed your integration badge, you now know better how to advise the customer or how to work on an implementation. So absolutely, I think passing is one thing, and it's great to have. But even if you're not passing, I feel people who've gone through the journey with the commitment and who've done the right kind of prep are definitely better architects, because it just teaches you the mindset of how to think and how to approach problems and how to think of alternatives, which is something which I didn't do so systematically before, you know. And I really think this brought that discipline into the architecture that is so useful. It just automatically switches your brain on to think about domains, to think about different aspects rather than get focused on one, which is the key thing about a good architect.
Sure. So can you've told us about the sacrifice and the you know, the missed family time, friend time. Can you remember the moment you found out you passed?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So doing CTA is tough. Waiting for CTA results is tougher. I can tell you that. So after you've gone through your review board, whatever weeks you have to wait for the results, it is, I think, the most painful torture I've been through ever, because I was so jumpy. I had my phone's notification, you know, sound on all the time in the evenings, especially. And then every time there was a thing, I was like, this must be the result. This must be the result. So yeah, very jumpy. So I remember finally when I got the email after, yeah, jumping for that email, I think two and a half weeks, I saw the email and I just saw on the top, the first line, congratulations, you have passed. And at that point, I felt like I lost control. I had to sit down. I was like, okay, I need to read through this email. I mean, I need to make sure, because I was in that state of, you know, denial and I don't know what this means. And yeah, but once I read through, I literally screamed and I ran downstairs. I was in my bedroom and my family was downstairs and they didn't know why I was in such a hysteria, but they figured it was something to do with CTA. And then, yeah, finally, when I managed to tell them through my jumbled words and screaming and when I was shrieking, they understood. And then it was a huge, like my son was really little. I think he was 5 or 6 at that point. And even he had seen me prepare so much that he was waiting for these results. And I think he just caught on to my excitement and he was jumping all over the sofa and he was hugging me. And yeah, it was a very emotional moment. And yeah, I can never forget. I can never forget that evening.
Yeah, a real family affair at the end, because like you said, yeah, they'd seen the sacrifice and what an achievement. So what did it, as of that moment, how does kind of life change from being a really great architect to then being a certified technical architect?
So from your work perspective, I think it doesn't change a lot because you've already got the quality that you've learned and you're already applying it. But I think from that credibility perspective, things just change. You know, once you walk into a customer and you say you're a CTA, that immediate credibility that comes with what you're saying is a great advantage of being a CTA. And I saw the conversations change from people asking for evidence or questioning what you do to, right, she must be right because she knows what she's talking about. And I think that's a huge advantage. But also I felt like, so I'm a big advocate of mentors and mentoring. So immediately after I passed my CTA, I took on mentoring, you know, someone else in Salesforce, and they were starting to prepare for the CTA. So I started paying back, but I also felt it was almost my duty to pay back because I knew the pain and the hard work that goes into it. And I felt the ecosystem that Salesforce has built is absolutely the right environment for people to thrive and grow into their career. And people who've got into the CTA, because you've gone through the pain, you know, you're so humble at that point that I'm just thankful I got it and I want someone else to get it. So yeah, for me, life changed in terms of credibility, the immediate respect you got, and also you got invited into, you know, a few exclusive clubs, which you look from outside and say, I'm not there yet. but no, it was good. It was the fun part after that, though I wouldn't say getting to it was fun.
Yeah, nice. So for anyone watching the video rather than listening to the podcast, they'll be able to see a MuleSoft sign behind your shoulder. Yeah. So that leads me on nicely to the current day. And can you tell us a bit about what you do now and what you really love about your day-to-day job?
Yeah, so I've now transitioned into a management role. So I manage a practice across EMEA for strategic architects and technical architects on MuleSoft. So I'm an RVP currently, so regional vice president in Salesforce. So I do miss the hands-on and being at the customer every day kind of scenario. But I think ever since I've transitioned into this role, it's been a different kind of challenging journey because now you're not just dealing with architecture, technology, and business problems. You're actually dealing with people, their aspirations, their motivations, and their ambitions, which is a different kind of learning curve. And I find it very interesting because I'm naturally a people person and I like listening to people. And I would like to think that I'm empathetic, you know, as a manager. But yeah, it's been an interesting journey. What I love about my role is now I don't have visibility of one customer, but I do have visibility of 90 customers across the board because my team's working on them. And I do enjoy my conversations about, you know, problem solving and how we get things done, but also have the visibility of how is our own business progressing? You know, how are we approaching our business as a product company? Because now I'm more engaged on product side and, you know, we're liaising on with the product teams. We're looking at roadmaps. We're looking at customer interactions. So it's a different, almost a different aspect of customer facing that I have now, which I think is quite interesting. So it's very different from my role as an architect, but yeah, leading architects, but also being that liaison and having more visibility into our own business, which I did not have before in my previous role, is the interesting aspect.
Yeah, nice. And whenever you see a problem in one of the customers, so one of your architects comes to you with a problem, and do you ever look at it and go, God, this is one I'd really like to jump on and solve myself?
Yes. There's been so many times where I've had to hold myself back because I knew I couldn't commit the time to do this. And especially when, because I come from Salesforce, you know, background, and now I'm trying to learn MuleSoft, the things which now come up as Salesforce and MuleSoft. And those are the pieces where I, you know, find it very difficult to hold myself back to say, I'm just not going to jump into the depth of it because otherwise, you know, I will not do any job well. So yeah, absolutely. Those are still very interesting problems and very enticing, which I have to work very hard to stay away from.
Sure. And someone that has obviously achieved so much, right? So a CTA, regional vice president within Salesforce, how do you keep setting goals and how do you keep striving for more? Because I know that obviously as a high achiever, that's something you're going to want to do. But how do you kind of make sure for yourself that you're always motivated for the next goal?
So for me, it's quite simple. If I think I'm too comfortable where I am, that's my cue to move on to the next challenge. And again, being a CTA and being in an architect's role or a strategic advisor role that I was in, I was getting comfortable where I was. And that's why I went on to MuleSoft because it was a very logical progression for me to go to because now you're a CTA. And then, you know, MuleSoft or any integration piece before we acquired MuleSoft was the missing link to digital transformation journeys. And when Salesforce acquired MuleSoft, I was really excited. You know, I was like, wow, you know, this is it. This completes our picture of customer 360 degree. So obviously I was very excited to move to this side and understand. And that's, as I said, I take my cues from my comfort level. And if I feel like I'm in this job, I'm still learning new things every day, I still figure out stuff, or I'm still discovering things I don't know, great, I'll stay on and I'll build. But I always have a next step in mind. And the moment I get too comfortable, I'm like, okay, now I need a new challenge.
Well, I won't ask you on camera what the next step is, but whatever it is, I'm sure you'll achieve it. And I'm really excited to see where you continue to achieve and push on. So thank you so much. I've really enjoyed the chat.
Thank you.
And I'm sure our listeners and viewers will be as equally as inspired as I am. So thank you very much.
Thanks. Thanks, Ben, for having me again.
My pleasure. I'll speak to you soon.
All right.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people in the Salesforce ecosystem as possible, and your reviews will help us do that.